Okay. Morning, people. Today's daf is Daf Yud Aleph in Shabbos. We're back on Yud Amud Beis, and we're starting today with Rav Chisda. Okay, we're going to go a little scattered today. We are going to quote halachas from one particular amora, and once we get stuck on this amora, so we're just going to go and say over other halachas by this amora as well. So it's going to sound like, until the next Mishnah, which is on the bottom of it, Aleph and Aleph, it's going to sound like we're a little bit scattered. In the meantime, however, we are going from yesterday's Sugya, and yesterday's Sugya takes us back to Friday, which is what you cannot do until you daven Mincha in the afternoon. Mincha in the afternoon is a chiyuv, it's an obligation to daven Mincha, and so therefore the Mishnah warns us not to get involved in any activities in the afternoon so that we will not forget about Mincha. At what point exactly do you need to stop doing these activities? So that's subject to a debate. When exactly are the beginnings of these activities? So that was a Gemara's discussion that we've had over the past couple of days. These activities include going to the bathhouse, getting a haircut, going to the tannery, not to eat, not to sit in judgment. And so with all this, so we've been discussing now these past couple of days various points exactly when these begin. Over the course of the yesterday's daf, we quoted Rava Bar Mechasya, who said something in the name of Rav Chama Bar Gurya, who then in turn said something in the name of Rav. So in other words, these are teachings that go all the way back to Rav. So if you remember yesterday, the last thing we did is that when you give a gift to somebody, so make sure they know that you're the giver. The reason, as Rashi explained yesterday, and I pointed out to Tosus as well, is that if you're giving charity, if you're giving tzedakah, obviously you don't want the recipient to know who it is. That would be embarrassing. And the Rambam writes in his depth chart in terms of giving tzedakah, the best way of giving tzedakah is to give somebody a parnasa. But after that, though, the second best way of giving tzedakah is to make sure that giver doesn't know who receiver is, and receiver does not know who giver is. So but over here, we're not talking about that. We're talking about simply giving a gift in order to engender more ahava v'achva, better relationships amongst people. And so you got to let them know. You got to let them know who gave it to them. So with that in mind, now we go on to the next part of the Gemara, which is really just a continuation. We're in the middle of the Amud. We're on Yud Amud Beis. The first word in the line is Ligluye. It's like right about halfway down the page. Rav Chisda Avinakabi Adei Tarte Matnasa Datura. Rav Chisda was holding in his hand two Matanos. Now, Matanos means, in this context, Matnos Kohanim. Right, there was a Perek in Chulin, if you remember back when we talked about Matnos Kohanim, and Rav Chisda was the recipient of Matanos, of these gifts. Every time you shecht an animal, every single time you shecht an animal, you must give portions of the animal to a Kohen. Specifically, Zoro L'chai V'keva. Zoro is the front right leg, L'chai is the cheek of the animal, which includes the tongue, and Keva is the fourth stomach of the ruminating animal. So these, right, they're delicious. These have to be given to a Kohen. Rashi points out the following. If you take a look at Rashi over here, So Rashi over here deals with the following. Rav Chisda was an Amor living in Bavel. So he was receiving Matnos Kahuna. So it does sound like that there's a mitzvah to do so even outside of Eretz Yisrael. Now, if you remember way back when we did this together in Chulin, that was a debate. It was a big machlokus whether or not the mitzvah of Zoro L'chai V'keva applies outside of Eretz Yisrael. So Rashi says, it sounds like from our Gemara over here, it does. It does apply outside of Eretz Yisrael. And Rashi says, let's not conclude that way. I'll read Rashi inside. Havinaki tarte manasa detura, Rashi writes, Zuk shel Zoro L'chai V'keva, it was a pair of matanos. So in other words, it was two arms, two cheeks and two stomachs. Shenanalo that was given to him. Now, first of all, this is not like truma, meaning truma Kohen cannot share with a non Kohen. Truma has to be eaten by a Kohen. A non Kohen to eat truma, it's chiyuv misa. So obviously, we're not talking about the consumption of. This is not like truma. Now, Rashi here makes the observation. Rav Chisda lived in Bavel. Lo yalfina mehacha dematanos doagas bezmanazem. So Rashi says, don't arrive at the conclusion that matanos apply nowadays. De ha'idna nog alma kitlasi sabe, because we follow three elder statesmen, meaning we have three tanayim who we follow and we're make all life. For example, Rashi quotes Gemara in Brachos, Rabbi Yosha b'Klayim, Rabbi Yehuda b'Tilas Balei Karin, Latama Torah, Rabbi Eli b'Reishis Hagez. The Gemara in Brachos says that we take upon ourselves certain kulas. One of those kulas, there are three in total, one of them is the position of Rabbi Eli. Shuhu Omer Eino Noheg Ella Ba'aretz. The mitzvah of Zor L'Chai V'Keva only applies in Eretz Yisrael, not outside of Eretz Yisrael. V'chei Matanus B'yimei Rav Chista Akati Lo Nag K'Rabbi Eli. And so Rashi therefore suggests that during the period of Rav Chista, now he lived well after the destruction of Bayis Sheni, and he lived in Chutz La'aretz. But Rashi conjectures that perhaps the acceptance of the kula of Rabbi Eli did not take place during the period of Rav Chista, over Yimei Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, no kavasei, and then you go to a later Amoraic generation, and they did accept the kula of Rabbi Eli, Breishis Hagez, Lama Matanos V'Hashak Hachazina, Tenau Gapa Matanos V'Chihechi De'achzu, B'minag Breishis Hagez, B'Yimei Rav Nachman, V'lo Machina Behu V'Nagna Kula Kavasei, Hashta Tenau Gapa Matanos Lo, Mishanina Minhaga. So in other words, then, so the minag changed, and once the minag changed to be Mekel, so therefore we're Mekel. Okay, so essentially what Rashi is arguing is that during the time period of Rav Chista was an early Amora, so they were still accepting Matanos in Chutz La'aretz, and then at a later generation, they were Mekel. Okay, that's
the question with Rashi. It didn't seem like the question was Chutz La'aretz, was it Bezmanazeh?
Yeah, but it's, if I remember correctly, it's a Chutz La'aretz issue.
Right.
Okay, I right. Okay, I hear you. All right, so Rav Chista was had this in his hand, and Amr Komanda Asiv Amr Lishmaita Chalata Mishmei Derav Yavinalei Nealei, and he says, "Look, I'm ready to give it up." Meaning, if somebody could teach me Torah, and specifically a member that was set over by Rav, so I'd be more than happy to part with my food. So Amr Rav Abar Mechasya. So again, same Amora. Rav Abar Mechasya comes over to him and Hachi Amar Rav, and he says in the name of Rav, I know say Matan Chaver Tzorch Laudio, that when you give a gift to a person, yeah, right? Yeah, you understand. Contextually, it's brilliant. So when you give a gift to a person, so you got to let him know who the giver is. And the Gemara goes over the pasuk that we went over yesterday when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the gift of Shabbos. So he let us know, by the way, I'm the giver of that gift of Shabbos. So Yavin Alei, so great. So Rav Chista was delighted. The teaching in the name of Rav, here you go. So Amar Chaviv and Alach Shmaita to the Rav Kulehai. So he points out to Rav Chista, wow, you really love to hear Torah by Rav. Amar Lein. So Rav Chista gave the obvious answer. Now Rav Chista was a student of Rav, right? So Amar Lein Hainadam Rav. So he says, I'll tell you something else that Rav said, which, by the way, fits in very well with the episode. Milsam Al Bishaihu Yikira. And Rashi explains that the person who has who's comfortable in a certain garment and a certain coat, so for him the coat is worth more, meaning that there is what's that called? Not the objective value of something, but its personal value, its our sentimental value. So I'm not sure if that's what the Gemara means over here, but in other words, there's a certain value to something, to somebody who is used to it, meaning you're used to the shir of Rav, you're used to hearing Torah from Rav, so for you now, it is more dear, the teachings of Rav. So Amalei Amar Rav Hachi Basrais Adif Ali Mikamaisa. So he says, I like that one even better than the first one. V'yav Nikit Nachrina Yavi Lach. Now if I had any more food to give you, I would have given it to you. But yeah, you already cleared me out. I have no more food to give you, but I enjoy that one as well. And here we go. Now the Gemara is just going to keep rolling on from here until the Mishnah. We're just going to roll with another statement and another statement made by the same Amora. Amar Rav Amar Mechasi Amar Rav Chama Bar Guri Amar Rav Lo Lama Yishana Adam Benav Ben Abanim. Don't show favoritism to any one of your sons. warns Rava Bar Mechasi in the name of Rav. Shebishil Mishkal Shnei Salayim Milas, because for the value of a garment that is worth two Salayim, Shenos and Yaakov LeYosef, that Yaakov gave Yosef, Yosef Mishar Banav, Niskan Ubo Echav, the brothers got jealous, Vinizgalga Hadavar, Vyadu of a single Mitzrayim. And the next thing you know, I mean, the story's a little bit long, we'll be reading the story in Shul. You know, over the now, I mean, you know, a little bit of time from now, starts in Parshas Vayeshev. So the story is a little bit intricate, but next thing we know, we're down in Mitzrayim. The Gemara warns us not to show favoritism to any one of our sons. I tell you, by the way, my Gemara economics is disastrous. It's terrible, because I always thought, meaning I'm sure, like me, this is not the first time you've heard this Gemara. I always thought that the coat that Yosef wore was worth two salayim. Okay, now it's clear I don't know how much a sella could buy, meaning I don't understand the value of a sella. Because Rashi over here points out, Mishkal Beis Salayim, lav dafka nakat. And in other words, it's not really two salayim. Two salayim cannot buy you a coat, says Rashi. So even though it says two salayim, what the Gemara just simply means by that is, it wasn't a lot. And Yaakov shouldn't have spent whatever little that was. Yaakov should not have given Yosef a special coat. And then he quotes his Rebbe, "B'tamid Rabbi Yitzchak Alevi Matzasi, Ketonus Pasim, Saviv Pas Yado Nasan Milas, Volo Kol HaKetonus." All the brothers basically got the same coat, but what Yosef got were, for lack of a better word, cufflinks. Yosef got special cufflinks. And that was worth two salayim. So in other words, but it's not going on the whole coat, because we all know, I didn't until reading this Rashi, we all know that a coat is much more than two salayim. Amar Rav Mecharsi, Amar Rav Chama Bergui, Amar Rav Lola Michazir, Adam V'yeshev Be'ir Shishiva Sakrova. You should sit in a city that doesn't have a long history to it. Okay, which explains why we live in Boca. So you should sit in a city that does not have a long history. And so therefore, less skeletons in the closet. You live in the city that's been around for a long time, lots of skeletons in the closet. Now the Gemara doesn't, I'm borrowing an expression over here, and but that's basically what the Gemara means. Okay, this will be a couple weeks from now in Shul. Right, Parshas Vayera. So Lot says to Avram, you know, let me go to a city that's nearby, and the city's name is Mitzar. And he says, and I'm going to run there because it's close by. Lot doesn't say it to Avram, excuse me. Lot says it to the Malachim. So my krova, so what does that mean, the city's nearby? So Elam krova de mikrova vizuta. Now, does he mean actually linear distance? So v'ha kachazile, meaning that's a very funny argument. Meaning it's evident, it's self-evident. He wouldn't have to give that argument if it's so clear. So ela mitoch sheyishiva sakrova, it means that the inhabitants of the city is close by, meaning it hasn't been inhabited for a long time. Avonasam mutzarim, and as a result of that, so the sins of the city are very few. So in other words, there aren't these like old, you know, borrow a term, there aren't these like old haunted mansions, right? But I don't mean that like literally. I mean that there are no skeletons in the closet. There's no past sins of the city that they have to answer for. Amar of Avin Maikra, Dichsiv Im Latana Shama. I want to run away over there and take a look at the word Na, and the Gemara does Gematria. Na begematria nun vechad, have v'shalsdom nun vebeis. So the city of Tsoar has been inhabited for 51 years, as opposed to Stom, which is a real old town. They've been inhabited for 52 years. Now that's fascinating to me, because we are now discussing, it sounds like from the Gemara we were going to speak like in like generational terms, meaning a city of 51 years versus a city of, oh, I don't know, a couple centuries. But, I mean, the Gemara is making a distinction between a 51-year-old city versus a 52-year-old city. It does sound like we're really thin slicing. Now, the city of Sodom, by the way, the Gemara says, around for 52 years, v'shalvatha chavav. Of those 52 years of Sodom, so in other words, before Sodom was destroyed, Sodom has been around for 52 years. That's the entire duration of the city of Sodom, and it was at peace for half of its existence. Of its 52 years, 26 of it were peace. How do I know that? So here we go to next week's parsha. Because Sodom was subject to Gedala Omer, subjects to Gedala Omer for 12 years, followed then by 13 years of rebellion. So that's 12 plus 13. 12 plus 13 is 25. Uva arba asrei shana, and in the 14th year. So that means then that 26 years Sodom was either subject to Kedarla Omer, rebelling against Kedarla Omer, or actually going to war against Kedarla Omer. So that's 26 years of non-peace. So that means that the remainder, the first 26 years of its existence, it was in peace. Okay, so we got a little bit of history of Sodom today. It lasted for 50 years, 2 years in total. Of those, 26 of them were peacetime years. 26 of them were wartime years. Interesting discussion. You could see Tosfos on the previous Amud. So now, where does that put the war of Sodom against Kedarla Omer? Meaning in the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, right? There's a war which Avram gets involved. He only gets involved because his nephew was taken captive. How old was Avraham now during that war? So Tosfos over here discusses Sodom nud beishana k'moshemuchich b'kunshe shaya Avram ben memchashana k'shenivne Sodom. Now I'm bypassing the Rashi. Rashi goes also over some of these numbers. So please take a look at Rashi inside. Avram was 48 years old when Sodom was built. Right, Avram was born in the year, or this is an easy one to remember, 1948. Mm-hmm. Okay, Avram was born in the year 1948. It's cute. And he was now 48 years when Sodom was built. And it was at peace now for 26 years. So what do we have now? 48 plus 26. So Avraham being now 74. Mashma shayu Avram ben, or 70... Okay. So that puts Avram now at 73 years of age when he kills the Malachim. Now that's going to be... That's tricky. Now, why do I say that's tricky? Because Parshas Lech Lecha, okay, it's great trivia. And it's not trivia, it's a pasuk in Chumash. And I find most people don't know this. Parshas Lech Lecha, Avraham moves to Eretz Yisrael in the beginning of the Parsha. How old was Avram when he moved? The pasuk says it. It's like one of the first pasukim in Parshas Lech Lecha. He was 75 years of age. Okay. And what that means is, and it's not shocking to us, meaning we know the Torah is not chronological, is that Parshas Lech Lecha is very choppy, chronologically. Meaning because the first story that we're told is him moving to Eretz Yisrael at the age of 75. Now, based on the numbers given over here, we have him fighting the war when he's 74, which is before that. And now he quotes Seder Olam. We're all familiar. Seder Olam is one of the first historical works, but it's rabbinic history, meaning it's our Masorah, it's our tradition in terms of what the history was. According to Seder Olam, Avram was 75 at the war, meaning that story is chronological in Chumash. Avram comes to Eretz Yisrael, and Avram fights the Malachim. Well, first thing that happens is, I skipped the sequence. First thing that happens is when he comes to Eretz Yisrael, there's a famine. Then he goes down to Mitzrayim. That's 3 months in Mitzrayim. Then he comes back, and then he fights a war. That was a busy year for Avram. But in other words, according to Seder Olam, all that happened when Avram was 75. If that's correct, So then it doesn't, according to Seder Olam, our Gemara's numbers don't work out. Because our Gemara's numbers work at 26 and 26. So, it in other words, you got to somehow reconfigure our Gemara based on the Seder Olam approach. By the way, I read this, I didn't explain it. The Seder Olam has Brisbane and Basarma when Avram Avinu was 70 years of age. That's clearly out of order. Meaning Brisbane and Basarim, that takes place later on in Parshas Lech Lecha. So that means that when you read Parshas Lech Lecha, you got to appreciate that him going to Eretz Yisrael at 75, according to the Seder Olam, the war against Kedar LaOmer, also at the age of 75. But then when you go on to the next part of the Parsha, Brisbane and Basarim, that was 5 years earlier. That was when Avraham Avinu was 70, according to Seder Olam. Ain mukta mamucha b'Torah. The fact that the Torah doesn't go in chronological order, that's fine. But in other words, you only know that after going through the Midrashim and the Gemaras and Seder Olam, then you get to look at it. Okay, we're on the top of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph Amar Rav Bar Mechasi Amar Rav Chama Bar Guri Amar Rav Kol Yishina Shegagusel Gvol Mibeit HaKnesses L'Sof Charava. City where the houses are built higher than the shul will be destroyed. Shenamar L'Ramemus Beis Elokeinu La'amid Es Charvo Sav. The Gemara quotes a pasuk in Ezra. And the pasuk in Ezra says that we want to raise Beis Elokeinu, meaning we want Beis Elokeinu to be higher. And the assumption of the Gemara is that every shul is a mini Beis Hamikdash, and so therefore you do not want the shul, you want the shul to be the highest building in the community. Now, that's true regarding residential housing. But as far as towers are concerned, fortresses are concerned, which is for the city's protection, you don't have to worry, they can be higher than the shul. Now Ravashi says, I was involved in city planning for the city of Mas Mechasia, and I ensure that it wasn't destroyed. The Gemara asks a very simple question. So the Gemara says, yeah, but Mas Mechasia was destroyed, and the Gemara's response is, may also avon lo charava. Only the Gemara can give this kind of answer. Yeah, it was destroyed, but not because of the city planning. It was destroyed for other reasons. Okay. Again, we are just now in the sequence of quoting statements by Rav Bar Mechasia, who quotes Rav Chama Bar Guri, who quotes Rav, so there may not necessarily be connection, although there may be. You just got to be creative in terms of making connection. Better to be subject to a Yishma'alite and not under a Nachri. Hard to know exactly when the Gemara says Nachri over here. In other words, Nachri is a very generic term. So Nachri over here means anyone specifically. So Rashi says Edom. Okay, so better Yishmael than Edom. Tachas Nachri velo tachas Chavar. Not Chaver, but Chavar. Under a Nachri, but not under a Chavar. Now, who are the Chavarim? So Rashi over here writes that the Chavarim is a nation who are descended from the Persians. Tosfos argues. Take a look at Tosfos inside. Take a look at Tosfos on your own. But first Tosfos on this Amud takes issue with Rashi. Tachas chavar velo tachas tamid chacham. Better to be employed for a chavar and not to be employed for a tamid chacham. I don't know if the Gemara is speaking about employment or just being subjects of... Okay. Could be just talking about regular employment. And not a Talmud Chacham. That's, of course, strange. And not under a Talmud Chacham. What's wrong with that? So Rashi over here explains. And Rashi writes, Im yakni tenu, ya'ani shenu. Because if, in fact, you get into an argument with a Talmud Chacham, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be quicker to take his side than yours. So it's tricky. And tachas tamach chacham lo tachas yasam va'amana. And better to be under the direction of a tamach chacham rather than either a yasam and amana. And you go back to the same Rashi that I just quoted, yasam va'amana mimnei shedim asam mitzuya. So Rashi writes that they're very sensitive And the Torah tells us again and again, make sure to take care of the yasam v'almana, the orphan and the widow. And any time you do anything to hurt them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I listen to them right away. So again, it's a very delicate situation for you to be employed by them, under them, because any issue you have with them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes it up right away. I'll take basically any illness, but not intestinal illnesses. The Gemara tells us this time and again, intestinal illnesses are the worst. I'll take any pain, but not heart pain. So, I'll take any type of headache, any type of ache of the body, but not a headache. Probably the Gemara here is referring to a migraine. And I'll take any evil in the world, but not isha ra. Right? It's a pasuk in Kohelas. Lo matzasi. Not right. Mishle. You're right. Right. I haven't found anything worse in the world than a isha ra. Amarav Amachasi. Amarav Chama Berger. Amarav Yiyu Kol Hayamim Dayo. If all the oceans were ink, the agamim kumusim. And if every reed in the world turned into a quilt, v'shamayim yirios, and if the heavens could be our parchment, v'chol b'nei adam lav l'arim, and if every person in civilization would be a sofer, ein maspikin lechtov chalol shel rishus, you still would not be able to document all the thinkings and going-ons and the planning that takes place in the government. Meaning, as Rashi explains, the government is so complicated and so complex, and Rashi goes on to say the government daily has to figure out taxing and budgeting. I know I sound like the news right now. Taxing and budgeting and war and laws. And all this has to be figured out by the government, and we couldn't even write down, even if given all the possibility, all the ideas and planning and machinations of a government. My kramer of Mishasha Shamaim Lavrom Veretz Laomek Valev Malachim Ein Cheker. We don't know, we don't understand, we can't possibly go into the depths of the thinking of a government. You have a bad dream, and you wake up in the morning, and so the Gemara basically says, we've seen this already in Brachos, here we get to see it again, fasting. Fasting is excellent. Fasting is an excellent way to dispel a bad dream. In fact, the Gemara says, it's like lighting a fire to flax. Amar Chisda says, correct, but you got to fast that day. Meaning the day you woke up from that bad dream, that's the day you have to fast. Amar Rav Yosef, afil b'Shabbos. And Rav Yosef says, and this is, it's so efficacious to fast, do so even on Shabbos. Rabbi Yoshua b'Rei d'Rav Idi Igla l'Bei Rav Ashi Avdilei Igla Tilsa. So the Gemara tells a story. Rabbi Yoshua goes to the house of Rav Ashi, and Rav Ashi prepares a very special meal. Igla Tilsa, the third calf or fat calf, right? Could go either way in terms of its understanding, but it's the healthiest, it's the most delicious. Okay, and Amrulay Litomar Midi, and the invitation of Nu, Sid, eat. So Amrulu Batanis Yasvina, and he broke the bad news to him. I can't eat, I'm fasting. I've accepted upon myself a fast day. This is not a public fast day. This was a private, a personal fast. Amrulay Velo Savale Mar, Lad Rav Yehuda, Dam Rav Yehuda, Lava Adam Tani, So Poreya. What do you mean? If it's a personal fast, do you know that you can borrow against your own fast? Okay, how does this work? It's very simple. Meaning, let's say you've taken upon yourself to fast today, so and then something like this happens, where somebody offers you a fantastic meal, so you say, you know what? Credit myself a fast. So then you put down on your ledger, I owe myself one fast. Okay, and then obviously you have to pay up at another time. So you're allowed to do that by personal fasts. So I'm a Tanis Chalamu. So he says, I can't. This is not just a personal fast, but this is in response to a dream. I can't eat today. Meaning, this is not just a tanis; it's a tanis chalom. And it only is efficacious if I fast today. So, with all apologies, and I'm very sorry, but I can't eat by you today, sir. Yeah, so and you could do a tavas chalom, you can make the dream good, and you could, it all falls in interpretation. Yep, I hear you. But im hizchilu in mafsikin, and mafsikin l'kriyashma. So if you start, you don't stop, but you do stop for kriyashma. So the Gemara says, hatan l'reishay mafsikin. So the Gemara says, I'm a little bit confused by the Mishnah. Meaning the Mishnah says a mafsikin, and then the Mishnah goes on to say mafsikin. Now, the idea that you have to stop for Kriya Shema, I don't think that's what bothers the Gemara, because, as I explained back in the Mishnah, we understood. Kriya Shema is a mitzvah d'oraisa. Tefillah is a mitzvah d'rabbanan. So, you don't stop for tefillah, but you do stop for Shema. So, seif also in the Divrei Torah. So, the Gemara says that when you got to the end of the Mishnah, we didn't know this when we read the Mishnah, but now we do, because the Gemara explains to us, we're not talking about mincha anymore, and we're not talking about stopping or not stopping for these activities. We are talking about the person who is learning Torah. And not just any person learning Torah, we're not talking about you or me, we are talking about the person who spends all of his waking hours learning Torah. The Italian will learn to the Brisa Chavin Shah Yoskim Torah, Mafsikin L'Kriyashma Ve Mafsikin L'Tfilah. They have an interesting halacha, which is that for a Shema, they have to stop. The recital of Shema is a mitzvah d'oraisa that you have to stop for. That you cannot stop, even though you're learning Torah nonstop. But for tefillah, so they could skip tefillah. They do not have to say tefillah, as they are now learning Torah full time. Skip mincha. I'm Rav Yochanan. Now, Rav Yochanan qualifies. Again, we're not talking about people who are learning Torah, even learning Torah daily. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about people who are only learning Torah. For example, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. That's setting the bar very high in terms of who we're talking about. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai v'chaver shetarasan umnasan. Meaning when they pack lunch, they're packing lunch because they're going to the base medrash, and that's what they do. They learn all time. But the rest of us, so we stop for Kriya Shema, we stop for davening. Now the Gemara says, now I do have a brisa, and the brisa says that we don't stop for anything. Meaning we don't stop for tefillah and we don't stop for Kriya Shema. So the Gemara says, no, Kitanya hi. Now that brisa is talking about something special. Ibur Shana. That's talking about the decision of adding another month. As we go into Adar, and the decision needs to be made. We haven't made this decision in 1700 years. But the decision needs to be made. Do we add another Adar? And this is a timely decision, meaning we are on the clock, because you know that once Adar comes to a close and once we declare the new month to be Nisan, we no longer have an opportunity to make an Adar base. Once Nisan is declared, that's it. And you really only can start making the decision once you get to the middle of Adar. So now you're in a 2-week deadline, and we have to decide whether or not to add. And it's and the decision, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, first parak of Sanhedrin, Daf Yud Aleph, Yud Yud Aleph, the Gemara over there goes over the number of factors that need to take into consideration. And you have to know the calendar, and you have to know the solar system, and you have to know the season, and you have to know the harvest. And there's a lot of information that needs to go in a very short amount of time to process. And right now, for those 2 weeks, the people involved in that decision, they don't daven, they don't say Shema, meaning they are focused solely on this decision that needs to be made. And as Tosfos points out over here, short Tosfos, the Yontif is at stake over here, meaning you have to know, is next month going to be Pesach, right? In other words, this is an extraordinarily important decision, and so you don't stop for anything. Am Rav Adar Ava v'chein Tani Sabi deHagrunya. Am Rav Elazar Bar Tzadok Kishayinu Auskin beIbra Hashana beYavne. Lo Ayinu Mafsikin Lo LaKriyash Mavlo Tzvila. And the Gemara gives testimony that this was in fact so. Rav Elazar Bar Tzadok says that when we were in Yavne and we were making the decision of whether or not to add an extra month, another base, so we didn't stop for anything. We didn't stop for Shema. We didn't stop for Tzvila. Okay. And now we start. We are on the Mishnah on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. And when I say we start now, we start with Hilchos Shabbos. Now when we start for Hilchos Shabbos, now we're talking about the preparation of Shabbos. What a person needs to do and not do on Erev Shabbos that prepares them for a Shabbos. So we're going to start with the don'ts. The do's, I think, are kind of self-evident. Although Mishnah later on, we'll talk about that. Then you got to make food. Right, you gotta set the table. You gotta clean your clothes. You gotta take a bath or a shower. In other words, that's right. Mikvah. Okay. So the do's we know. Here in the Mishnah we start with the don'ts. Lo yetzeh chayit b'machto samach lechashecha. You're a tailor. Now, being a tailor, so you have a needle in hand, always ready to tailor. And when I say needle in hand, so I almost mean that literally. So, okay, so the needle's not in your hand. Where's the needle? So you tuck it right into your garment. You thread it right through your garment, so that on a moment's notice you're ready for action. Take the needle right out. So on Erev Shabbos already, we say to the tailor, don't put the needle back in your jacket. Shema yishkach v'yetze, because what's going to happen is that Friday night's going to roll around, and you're going to forget that needle's in your jacket, and you're going to walk outside. Now, please understand that we're assuming that there was no Erev, right? Because nowadays, where we're so used to, Baruch Hashem, and it's a good thing, we're so used to having an Erev. Like, we don't think about carrying, not carrying.
But even with an Erev, you're not thinking about Muktzah constantly.
Muktzah is an issue also, but right now, as you'll see, this is a Gzerah Derabanan, and it's for the concern about violating Nisud Daraisa. So, yes, Muktzah, but...
With an Erev, there will be a concern for Muktzah.
There will be a Muktzah consideration, but this is talking about already an Erev Shabbos. So an Erev Shabbos, you have to take the needle out of your clothing. V'lo alav la b'kol moso. And you know how the sofer, well, you know, I always have the picture of the sofer having his pen in his ear. But but same thing. In other words, don't carry your quill around with you on Friday afternoon for fear that you'll have forgotten and then walk around with it on Friday night. And that would be a violation of the Malach of Hotzah. V'lo yafles keilav. And also, don't delouse your clothing. Okay?
Bugs.
Yeah, right. For those of you who have any experience with bed bugs, you certainly understand this. But what are we talking about right now? We're talking about before Shabbos, we're talking about on Shabbos. It's a little bit unclear. When we get to the Gemara, we'll have a better understanding. Lo yafles kelav, don't delouse your clothing. V'lo yikra lo or aner, nor read. Sorry, sorry. V'lo, and don't read by the light of the fire. Now, as Rashi points out over here, we are talking about on Shabbos itself. Meaning, you know, there's a mitzvah to light candles on Friday night. Okay, and the purpose of which we'll talk more about this in the second parak. Is for the purpose of illumination. Meaning, you want Friday night to be enjoyable, you don't want to sit in the dark. We don't worry about that because we have something called electricity, okay, but you have to understand that for most of civilization, we didn't have this thing called electricity. So if you want the light at night, so you lit the kerosene lamp, you had a fire. And so the mitzvah, as dictated by Chazal, is to light candles Friday afternoon so that you have illumination on Friday night. Even though that's so, there are certain activities that you cannot do to the light of your Shabbos licht. You can't, and that's what our Mishnah here is referring to, you can't delouse your garments, and you can't read to that light. And the reason why, as Rashi explains, is because if you start reading to that light is, it's not a lot. And you are going to be very tempted to get, you're going to want to, right, you're going to want to increase the amount of light. So what you're going to then do, not with any type of intent of violating Shabbos, but just simply because it's normal human behavior, is you're going to want to tilt the lamp in order to get more fuel in order to produce a brighter light. And that, obviously, would be a violation of Shabbos. So therefore, what the Mishnah here is giving us are basically a list of gzeiras. So for the tailor, don't walk around with a needle. For the sofer, don't walk around with the kol nerev Shabbos. And Friday night, don't delouse your clothing to the light, because you're going to want to tilt it. And don't read to the light of that fire. The Emes Amru. In truth, they said, Emes Amru is a term that you're going to see in the Mishnayos a number of times. It's code for, this is accepted halacha. Undisputed, unchallenged. HaChazan Ro'eh Heichan Tinokas Karin. That if it's a Rebbe teaching the students on Friday night, so the Rebbe can point to where the students are reading from, and here the gzera does not apply. The gzera is only applying for the individual reading to the light, but if you have a Rebbe and student in a room on Friday night, so that's allowed. We'll explain why later on. Avahulo yikarei, but he himself should not read. Kayotze bo. And the Gemara says, and let me give you another idea of what we're talking about. Now this is going to sound like left field. Lo yochal azavim azava mimnei hergol avera. A zav should not be eating together with a zava. A zav is a man who had a discharge. Not exactly a balkari, something similar, but he's tamei. The zava is a woman who also had a discharge. She is tamea. They shouldn't eat together because one thing will lead to another. They will have bia. Having bia with a zava is an iser kares. And so therefore they may not eat together. The Gemara is going to discuss later on what... Yeah, why is this here? Eating together, what's that? In other words, the Gemara is going to discuss later on in more detail what that has to do with anything. On the simplest level, all the Mishnah is basically teaching us is, it's another gzera. Meaning, here's our Mishnah giving us a list of gzera derabanan, and here's another gzera to add to the list. Okay, but we'll talk more about that later on. Tanan ha'sam lo yamar adam v'shus yach v'yishte v'shus harabim. V'shus harabim v'yishte v'shus hayachin. It's a Mishnah, it's a Mishnah in Erevin. And the Mishnah in Erevin says as follows. You're standing in a Rosh Hashayachid, and there's a puddle of water. Puddle's not the best way to say it, but it doesn't matter. There's water in the Rosh Hashayachid. So here's what you can't do. Don't stand in the Rosh Hashayachid and drink water, bend over and drink in the Rosh Hashayachid. Why? Because we're worried. Meaning, in of itself, that's not a problem. And yeah, I know that the water, as you ingest it, is going to go into your stomach, which may be in the Rosh Hashayachid, but that's not really the concern. The concern is that you won't finish drinking the water, and with the water in your mouth, you're simply going to retract, and you're going to carry the water from the Rosh Hashayachid to Rosh Hashayachid, and the opposite is true as well. Meaning, don't stand in the Rosh Hashayachid and drink in the Rosh Hashayachid. Aval, but the Mishnah continues. Im hichnis rosho verubo lamakum shu shose mutter. If you transfer your whole body, or not even your whole body, but the majority of your body into the other domain, so then it would be okay. Okay. That is the Mishnah. V'chein v'gas. And the Mishnah says, and the same thing is true regarding a vat of wine. What? What does that mean? What is that talking about? Stay tuned, we'll get back to that in just a moment. Now, Ibai Lahu. The Gemara now asks a very simple question based on this Mishnah in Erevin. Why are we learning the Mishnah in Erevin together? So you'll see, because our Mishnah here in Shabbos is going to tie into this discussion. Karmelis Mai. Now the Mishnah in Erevin is clear, is very clear, that you can be in a Rosh Hashayachid and drink in a Rosh Hashayachid, or the opposite as well. You can be in a Rosh Hashayachid and drink in a Rosh Hashayachid. And again, the consideration is very simple. Because you may bring the water back into the other domain. That's easy. I wonder, says the Gemara, would the same thing be true if you're standing in Rosh Hashayachid and the water was in a Karmelis? Or if you're in a Karmelis and the water is in Rosh Hashayachid? Now, would we be concerned as well? So, my. So, Amar Abaye.
That's a Gezer on top of the Gezer.
Amar Abaye. Right? We're cooking. Amar Abaye. He. So, Abaye says. Same story, right? Or as they say in Spanish, it's a Zelbazach. So Rava Amar, and Rava says, no, he goof a gzera. Look, carrying from a Karmelis to Rosh Hashayachid, that already is a gzera. V'ana nekom v'negzer gzera l'gzera, and we're going to make a gzera on top of a gzera. So let's pause here in the Gemara for just a moment. Right? Rava's right. And he doesn't need me to say that. Rava's right, meaning that's a general rule throughout all of Shas. We've seen this time and again. That when, what happens is when the Chachamim make a gzera, you don't compound another gzera on top of that. The only reason why you can't stand in Rishus Rabbim and drink from Rishus Yachid is the fear, the concern, the gzera that maybe you'll retract. If the water's in a karmelis, so the idea to begin with of carrying from a karmelis to Rishus Yachid is to begin with a derabbanan and then compound that and add to that. I'm not allowed to stand in Rishus Yachid and drink in a karmelis because maybe I'll retract. That's a gzera l'gzera, and we don't do that. Now, so Rav is very clear. And how do we understand Abaye? So meaning Abaye doesn't subscribe to the rule of gozer gzera l'gzera? Hard to imagine. Hard to imagine that's such a fundamental debate. And so sometimes what you can answer very simply is kula chad gzerahi. It's all one big gzera. It's an interesting Tosfos. So I'll point to the Tosfos. It's the first one on the Talmud. Amar Abaye mina minala di gazrin gzera l'gzera dafka behotza'a gazer Abaye. So Tosfos says that Abaye, of course, agrees in general to this principle of ein gozrin gzera l'gzera. Only in the world of hotza'a do we do this. Are we going to make compound gzeros? V'cholhanu d'maisi raya ayri behotza'a. In fact, as we go through the Gemara coming up, you're going to see that every proof that we're going to bring on behalf of Abaye is only going to be subject to the world of Hotza'a. Of Abama Logazar. But in general, no. Meaning this is not a global debate between Abaye and Rava. It is localized to the discussion of Hotza'a. Globally speaking, of course we all agree, in Gozer, Gzera, L'Gzera, only by Hotza'a are we going to have this debate.
But it still doesn't tell you what principle it uses to apply.
So perhaps, and this is me talking now, and me suggesting, take it for whatever it's worth, and perhaps we are extra cautious by Hotza'a. I mean, I made this point already on day one of the Masechta, meaning Hotza'a doesn't look like a malacha. Right? It's what Tosfos referred to as a malacha gerua. It's an inferior malacha. In fact, Tosfos says, that's why in the first mission of the Masechta, we keep going over every possible scenario of Hotza'a, because people don't get it. Meaning, it's hard to picture as a malacha. There's no creativity that's being done. So perhaps, maybe even in the world of Gzera, I'm explaining Abaye. We don't hold like Abaye, but I'm just giving us some sort of basis to understand. So according to Abaye, normally I would say, Ein gozer gzera l'gzera, but in the world of Hotza'a, because it's quote-unquote this inferior malacha, so then maybe the rabbis were extra cautious and therefore imposed even compound gzeras by Hotza'a, perhaps. Amar Abaye mina minala diktani v'chein begas. So now Abaye says, look, I think I'm right. Because look at that Mishnah back in Erevin. What does that Mishnah say? Same thing by a gas. My gas. Now what is that talking about? So, Irishus HaYachid Tanina, Irishus HaRabim Tanina. Now, the Mishnah wouldn't just simply be repeating itself. That's not how the Mishnah works. El Alav Karmelis. But rather, it must be talking about a Karmelis. So Abaye says, that's what the Mishnah is talking about. And it says even that's prohibited. Now Rav Amar, Rav says, no, you totally missed the Mishnah. V'chein begaslin yemaiser. You didn't get it. That Mishnah by an Erevin that says v'chein begas has nothing to do with transferring from Rishus Yachid to Rishus Rabim. That's a totally different issue altogether. Look at Rashi. Le'inyan maiser. Rashi, d'shiyah l'agas mamish shelo akru misham lahotziya chutza havishiyah sarai upater mimaiser kozman shelo yavar labor. You know, before final processing of wine, you can take a little sip of the wine. It's fine. Meaning, even though you have not taken off trumas and maestros. Why? Because in other words, the kvius, the establishment of trumas and maestros is only at the end processing of the wine. And that's only when it's drained into the pit. Before that point in time, however, a little sip is okay. But it has to be a rye. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Yeah, it has to be a rye. The Chachamim said that to sit down and to really enjoy bikvias, even though technically it's not chayav in Shemot Samaisos, the Chachamim said no, that you cannot do. So the rules are that before the end processing, before it's drained into the pit, so you can have a little sip. Shuhu gemar malach tola meiser avalo siyam misham have keva. So to take a glass of wine out of the vat room, that you can't do because that's considered achilas keva. So the only thing you could do is to have a sip of wine right there at the vat. She'ein batato la'achzir amoser. Va'afagav delo nigmar malachton la'maiser aser. Good? So those are the ground rules. And so what the Mishnah now is telling us is that just like on Shabbos, I can't lean in to drink from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, so too in the world of drinking wine from the vat, I can only do so b'derech arai and not b'derech kvias. And what exactly does that mean? So the Gemara is going to explain. We learn a mission together in Masros, Shosin al Hagas. You can drink while you're directly over the vat. And it doesn't matter if it's hot or if it's cold. And the distinction between whether it's hot or whether it's cold. What's the difference? Rashi explains, if it's hot, mazgu bechamim shuv ein roi lahachzir hamosar. Shaloyach mitzatayar machmasachamim. Because if there's anything left over, you're not going to pour it back. It's going to ruin the rest of the wine. So therefore, you're going to finish it. But sonein, you may take a little sip. You may pour the rest back. Meaning that's all right. Mimei shu machzir samosar. So good. So in other words, that's what the Mishnah over there is talking about. In other words, just like we make precautions by hotza'ah, we make precautions in terms of drinking wine directly from the vat. Good. And now with all that in mind, now we go back to our Mishnah, and this is why we're having the discussion right now. My love, the tchuva la bebigdo. Now, this needle, where's the needle? As I described when we learned the Mishnah, the needle's in his clothing. Now let me ask you a question. Carrying a needle while it's in your clothing, you violated hotza'ah. Did you really? Very good. Right? Did you really violate hotza'ah? Meaning, because in order to carry on Shabbos, you have to carry in the usual manner. Carrying a needle in your clothing, is that usual? Okay, good. Okay, good. Perfect. I set that up well. And I'm usually hard on myself, so. So I said, okay, good. Lo denakele biyadis. So the Gemara says, well, no, we're talking about where he's holding in his hands, and that's what the Mishnah means. Meaning, don't carry around the needle in your hand, for fear that on Friday night you'll be carrying it around your hand, and that's the malacha of otza. Wait. Good. Tashma. Lo yetze achai b'machto atchuvah lo b'bigdo. So I'll show you a brisa, and the brisa says, even when it's in his clothing. So my law bearer Shabbos lo kitanyi b'Shabbos. So that brisa is talking about on Shabbos itself. That time the Gemara says, "Let me show you another brisa." Lo yetzeh chay b'machto atchuva b'bigdo be'erev Shabbos im chashecha. I have this brisa. It's talking about the needle in the garment on erev Shabbos. What are you going to do now? So hamani Rav Yehuda he. So the Gemara says that subscribes to the position of Rav Yehuda de Amar. Uman derech umnaso chayav. Okay, good. Like a lot of you were saying. Yeah, for him, this is up to debate, but according to Rav Yehuda, for him that is normal. And therefore that is considered carrying. Did Tanya will enter a brisa. Lo yetzer chayav b'machto atchuv lo b'bigdo. V'lo nagar b'kisam shabaz no. V'lo sarek b'mashicha shabaz no. V'lo gardei b'ira shabaz no. V'lo tzava b'dugma shabatzava ro. V'lo shulchan b'dina shabaz no. You'll forgive me for not translating each one of these. But basically the idea is, for every craftsman who carries the item as he normally would, which means not in his hand, but even in his garment, or behind his ear, but in other words, carries it the way he normally does, Yatsapatra of Allah Sadiv Rameir. So according to Rav Meir, that is not the malacha of Hotzah, because carrying means carrying it in your hand. Rav Yehuda Omer, Uman Derech Umnaso, Chayav, Vishar Kola Adam Pator. And Rav Yehuda says, no. For the craftsman, for the person who, this is how for him this is normal, it's therefore normal. And therefore, if he does it on Shabbos, he would be chayv. For the rest of us, I'm not a tailor. If I walk out with a needle in my garment, for me, I'd be potter. For the tailor, he would be chayv because for him, it's normal. So you see that, at least according to Rav Yehuda, it is a malacha daraisa of hotza'ah. So therefore, the braisa that says that you cannot go out on Shabbos with a needle in your clothing, you cannot go out on Erev Shabbos with a needle in your clothing, that particular braisa is found like Rav Yehuda. So again, to the question of, do we make compound gzeiros? So it is now still subject to a machlokes between Abai and Rava. Abai says, yes, we do, in the world of Hotzah, as I explained earlier. And Rava says, no, we do not. We don't make a gzeira l'gzeira. So our Mishnah, how are you going to understand our Mishnah? Of not going out with a needle, so you can understand it one of two ways. Either you're holding the needle in your hand, which would be a violation of the Malach of Hotzah, or two, our Mishnah is going like Rav Yehuda, where even though the needle is in your garment, that is considered hotzah, and you would be violating a malacha, and therefore it's only one gzera of not to stick it into your garment on Friday afternoon.